From the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, you're listening to Earth First Radio. Stay tuned for No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music.
You're cutting chainsaws, killing the trees, something, everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run.
And welcome to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Each week I bring you No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music for activists on the front lines of the environmental movement. In the news tonight, you'll hear about the folks who are killing the planet and the folks who have detailed information about saving what's left. They all have names, addresses, phone numbers, fax numbers, email or web addresses. So please go get a pencil or a pen and some recycled paper to write down the information you're about to hear, because this isn't couch potato radio. It's activist radio. And I urge you to take down the information and act on it. You really can make a difference by writing letters, sending faxes, and making phone calls when you aren't out in the woods or up in a tripod or a tree sit or locked down at the Dragon in the road blockade. If you have information, announcements, or comments for Earth First Radio, please keep your pencil handy and listen for the contact information and addresses later on in the show. Let's start off with announcements. The National Forest Protection Convention, October 15th through 17th, the National Forest Protection Alliance will hold its national convention to discuss and build upon the campaign to protect public lands from commercial exploitation, especially logging, near Carbondale, Illinois. To register and find out more information, contact Jeanette Russell. Her email address, Russell, R-U-S-S-E-L-L, at wildrockies, all one word, .org. That's Russell at wildrockies.org. And the bike ride for Southeastern Forests is occurring between October 17th and 21st. Five members of Earth Culture of Greensboro, North Carolina, will ride almost 1,000 miles in total to defend Southeastern Forests. The ride will include 23 demonstrations against wood products facilities. Somehow I think that isn't going to take place in 4 days. I think maybe it's October 17th through November 21st. You never know about these things. Anyway, if you want more information, contact Rick Spencer for dates and locations. His number, 336-691-0022. That's 336-691-0022. Or contact Earth Cull, that's E-A-R-T-H-C-U-L, at nr.infi.net. Earth Cull at nr.infi.net. And the Centennial Conference for the Southern Appalachians, October 22nd and 23rd. The Southern Appalachian Forest Coalition will host a day-long conference in Asheville at the North Carolina Arboretum, followed by a celebratory evening at the Grove Park Inn in honor of the 1899 establishment of the Southern Appalachian National Forests and Parks. For more information, contact Southern Appalachian Forest Coalition at 828-252-9223. That's 828-252-9223. And the Northern Rocky Mountain Law Conference is scheduled for October 30th and 31st. The American Wildlands will host the conference entitled Intersections, Water Quality, Water Quantity, and Native Species. Activists and attorneys will work to provide additional tools under federal and state laws for protection and restoration of the biological diversity of the Northern Rockies watersheds. Contact Judy Brower, B-R-A-W-E-R, for registration information. Her phone number, 406-586-8175. That's 406-586-8175. Or send email to jbrower, J-B-R-A-W-E-R, at wildlands.org. For you folks up near Portland, Oregon, there is a Big Brother in the Holding Company and Pele Juju benefit concert for the Greenhouse Network. I want to let folks in Portland know that Pele Juju, out of Santa Cruz, one hell of a great band. And, of course, I think I remember Big Brother in the Holding Company. You never know. Anyway, the benefit concert for the Greenhouse Network is in Portland, Oregon, September 25th. That's a Saturday, a week from this coming Saturday. And probably a week from, or this coming Saturday, for those of you up in that area who listen to Earth First Radio, slightly delayed. Anyway, it's taking place at the Crystal Ballroom. They'll have special guests Everyday Dirt and the Honorable Lionel Hurst, ambassador from Antigua and Barbuda. For tickets, contact 503-225-0047. That's 503-225-0047. The proud sponsors are the Cascadia Times and the National Environmental Trust, KBOO Radio, Music Millennium, Deep E Company, and Kyoto Now. If you want more information about the Greenhouse Network, go to their website at www.greenhousenet, all one word, .org. That's www.greenhousenet.org. Once again, September 25th at the Crystal Ballroom in Portland, Oregon. Big Brother and the Holding Company and Pele Juju in a benefit concert. Let's get into activist news. Ever since the Biotic Baking Brigade Northeaster Irregulars agent Creamy Jeans was arrested March 16, 1999 for smooshing a cream pie in the face of geneticist Neil First. In a University of New Hampshire lecture hall, pie lovers everywhere have wondered if pie is really a crime. The climax of this story is now approaching. University police have arrested a second person they believe to be the notorious Agent Lemon Soufflé, who participated in the original pie crime. Renee Medford was arrested August 19th and charged with disorderly conduct, despite clear evidence she could not possibly be the agent in question. Ms. Medford will be arraigned and will clear up this matter of harassment September 30th in Durham District Court. October 7th, a week later, in the same court, Agent Creamy Jeans will stand trial for assault and conspiracy to damage the projection screen in front of which the dastardly professor was standing. The pie thrower faces up to 2 years in jail and a $4,000 fine if found to actually be the menace science and security claim him to be. In the agent's view, quote, scientists and CEOs continue to assault us and the world with genetic engineering through pharmaceutical development, animal testing, and cloning, the Human Genome Project, and our actual current food supply. They are even developing a gene gun with help from the University of New Hampshire to wield against us in their war. Who is the aggressor here? Oh, that's a good question. And from Eureka, California, the parents of environmental activist David Nathan Chain, 24, killed a year ago by a tree felled by Pacific Lumber Company logger while Chain was protesting near Grizzly Creek Redwood State Park, have filed a wrongful death lawsuit against the company. After more than a decade of protests, the company should have had a policy in place to deal with protesters in the woods, said Stephen Schechtman, an attorney representing Chain's parents, Cindy Allsbrooks, and David Allen Chain, both of Texas. Quote, it's factually impossible to say that by 1998 Pacific Lumber didn't anticipate there would be protests in the woods, Schechtman said. And David Allen Chain told the Associated Press, I think my son would still be alive today except for the way they carried out their policy. They ought to be held responsible for it. The suit also alleges that A.E. Amons, the logger who cut the tree that killed Chain, knew the protesters were in the woods and purposely felled trees in their direction, an allegation Amons and PL officials have denied. Amons is also named as a defendant and would not comment on Saturday. Humboldt County District Attorney Terry Farmer found Chain's death to be accidental and did not file charges against anyone. He said earlier that he believed Amons didn't know Chain was there. In a prepared statement, PL spokesperson Mary Bullwinkle said Chain's death was completely avoidable had he not been trespassing on private property while timber harvesting was in progress. Pacific Lumber's lack of a policy was, quote, a fairly calculated effort, unquote, to get more money from the sale of part of Headwaters Forest to the state and federal governments, Schechtman said. When Chain died, more than 17,000 people had trespassed on Pacific Lumber property to protest the company's practices, the lawsuit said. And any reasonable company at the center of such a controversy would have instructed its employees on how to safely deal with future protests. Company officials determined it was in their best interest to, quote, exploit the activist and vast amount of local and national publicity they created, unquote, to get more money for Headwaters, the lawsuit contends. The state and federal governments paid $480 million for 10,000 acres of forest, and this amount was set by the time Chain had died. The defendants, quote, no longer perceived an economic benefit in the presence of activists, and such would not be tolerated, the suit said. The day before Chain's death, several activists were arrested in the area near Grizzly Creek Redwood State Park, and Schechtman said the PL officials should have known the protesters would be there and should have instructed their employees on how to handle the situation. Pacific Lumber President John Campbell, also named as a defendant in the suit, told the Associated Press the contention that the firm had encouraged protests was nonsense. In the statement, Bullwinkle said the company is confident the court will find Pacific Lumber and its employees not responsible for Chain's death. Also named as defendants are PL subsidiaries Salmon Creek Corporation and Scotia Pacific Corporation, and PL employee Rhett Reback. And we thank the Times Standard, Sunday, September 12th, for this information, for this story written by Suzanne Zolov. And things you can do to protect forests and wildlife. Now that Judge Dwyer has found the Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management to be violating the Northwest Forest Plan and illegally avoiding their duty to protect wildlife in our national forests, we must fight congressional writers that sanction the unlawful acts of these rogue federal agencies. Section 329 of the Senate Interior Appropriations Bill would waive all wildlife survey requirements for the Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management. This rider was inserted by Senator Slade Gordon of Washington. Senator Charles Robb tried unsuccessfully recently to get the rider removed on the Senate floor, but now we have to convince President Clinton to veto Ignorance is Bliss rider. Second, the Forest Service and BLM are already considering a major plan amendment that would substantially weaken the Northwest Forest Plan survey requirements. The Oregon Natural Resources Council and others are working hard to convince the agencies to reconsider this plan amendment. The court ruling should add substantial leverage to our call to strengthen rather than weaken the forest plan. We look toward this forthcoming EIS as an opportunity to strengthen the Northwest Forest Plan by ending logging in roadless areas and old growth. First, what can you do? Since the Senate has turned down the Robb Amendment, Senator Gordon's Section 329 rider will be negotiated in conference committee and may soon be on the president's desk. We must not choose ignorance over science-based management. Ignorance is not an acceptable guiding principle for our forests. Please call the president. Here's his number, 202-456-1414. That's 202-456-1414. Or write to President Clinton at the White House, Washington, D.C., 20500. Once again, President Clinton's address is the White House, Washington, D.C., 20500. And tell President Clinton to convince the conference committee to remove Section 329, and if it's still there, to veto it when the bill gets out of Congress. And here's the second thing you can do. You need to write to the Environmental Impact Statement team and insist that they consider strengthening the Northwest Forest Plan rather than just weakening it. Send your email to orchgmb@or.blm.gov. That's orchgmb@or.blm.gov. And please add the following subject line: Survey and Manage EIS Scoping Comments. That'll make sure that your email gets to the right place. Once again, that subject line is Survey and Manage EIS Scoping Comments. Here's some things to let them know. First, the purpose and need for the Environmental Impact Statement should be to find the best way to provide habitat to maintain viable populations of species, especially those associated with old growth. Number two, consider an environmentally preferred alternative that protects all remaining roadless areas of greater than 1,000 acres and all remaining old growth to provide physical connectivity and forest reserves. Three, to consider cumulative impacts of the salvage rider and other informal adjustments that the agencies have made to the plan. And four, strengthen the survey and manage program by adding more at-risk species to the list of species that must be surveyed. Here's the address to send your comments to: Bill Torgerson, that's Torgerson, at the Bureau of Land Management, Oregon State Office, P.O. Box 2965, Portland, Oregon, 97208. That's Bill Torgerson, Bureau of Land Management, Oregon State Office, P.O. Box 2965, Portland, Oregon, 97208. And do it today. And here's an action announcement. An underground group destroyed corn and left a mocking sign in organic seeds at UC Berkeley's Oxford Test Track Research Facility on Tuesday morning, according to an anonymous communique released. In the second known anti-genetic engineering action this week, the group calling itself Reclaim the Seeds carved a crop circle of conscience in the corn test field, scattered organic corn seeds in its place, and posted a sign mocking Berkeley's own $10,000 reward for previous attacks against research corn. And I'm going to read the Reclaim the Seeds communique. Here it is, Tuesday, 14th September, 1999. Quote, we are not going to demand anything. We are not going to ask for anything. We are going to reclaim the seeds. We are going to stop genetic mutilation, unquote. Resistance against genetics in the United States is on the rise, and UC Berkeley has once again been struck. A group calling themselves, quote, Reclaim the Seeds, unquote, targeted UC Berkeley's Oxford Track Research Facility and the address 1751 Oxford Street in Berkeley, California, where research on genetically mutilated corn is taking place. A crop circle of conscience was carved out of mature rows of malicious corn, and organic corn seeds were scattered in their place. A reward sign mocking UC Berkeley's own $10,000 reward for previous attacks against their harmless corn was left in the center of the crop circle. The sign stated, 10,000 bags of organic corn seeds for information leading to the arrest and conviction of the following corporate sellouts. Dean Gordon Rouser, Chancellor Robert Birdall, and Novartis grant recipient Professor Michael Freeling. The corn at Oxford Track was targeted by Reclaim the Seeds because of Professor Michael Freeling's involvement at that facility. Professor Freeling is the first recipient of a grant from the Novartis Agricultural Discovery Institute. And if you'd like to contact Professor Freeling, his phone number 510-526-5850. That's 510-526-5850. And his email address is Freeling, F-R-E-E-L-I-N-G, at nature.berkeley.edu. That's Freeling at nature.berkeley.edu. In November of 1998, UC Berkeley signed a controversial deal with Novartis despite massive public and faculty pressure. 2 months ago, the California croppers destroyed corn at the Gill Tract facility in Albany, California. It is unsure whether the corn destroyed at the Oxford Tract was genetically engineered or not, but because the university and USDA's secrecy about field tests, this information is kept from the public despite the fact that UC Berkeley is a state institution. Regardless, the research worked on at UC Berkeley with Novartis's and Monsanto's generous financial assistance will be used to further the commercial and profit-driven goals of the biotechnology industry. Modern agribusiness and genetic mutilation is a capitalist machine that must be dismantled in order to stop the massive destruction of biodiversity. Reclaiming the seeds is a direct action that destroys corporate power and authority. It is about people taking responsibility for themselves and highlighting the environmental and social costs of genetic mutilation, whichever. By leaving behind organic seeds, we are not only dismantling the current destructive system, but setting in place a sustainable alternative that will transform and undermine corporate power. In order to prevent further genetic mutilation, we must free ourselves from the corporate bondage of multinationals such as Novartis, Monsanto, Agrivo, and DuPont, and liberate the seeds. To reclaim the seeds is to rediscover the sacredness of life and the power found within a seed. To reclaim the seeds is to rescue biodiversity from industrial society and its defamation of life. As long as we allow economies to run on the basis of profit for business, genetic mutilation and exploitation of seeds will occur. Genetic mutilation is a frightening runaway industrial technology that tampers with nature on its most basic level. Genetically mutilated seeds are being held prisoner by corporate greed. We must reclaim biodiversity. We must reclaim the seeds. Reclaim the seeds will sprout again when the World Trade Organization meets for their millennium round of negotiations. Dan Glickman, Secretary of Agriculture, has already made it clear that the implementation of biotechnology is central to this year's WTO meeting. Let this action serve as a warning to the unaccountable governments and corporations and faceless trade bureaucrats that their genetically engineered vision of the world will topple. Let this be a source of inspiration for all others to reclaim the seeds in Seattle, November 28th through December 3rd. And so I think that when we play with earth and seeds, we do it with a stimulating humility, because we know we are playing with the things of life, which are the most enduring importance. And that's from The Philosophy of Gardening, written by Claire Lighton, in an address given at the Horticultural Meeting of St. Paul, Minnesota, June 1947. And that's been the communique from Reclaim the Seeds. Let's move into animal news here. In an appeals court in South Carolina has ordered a halt to a deer hunt in a state wildlife sanctuary. The South Carolina Department of Natural Resources and the Community Service Associates of Sea Pines want to kill up to 250 deer at Sea Pines, a state-designated wildlife sanctuary on Hilton Head Island, because they claim the deer are eating landscape plants and are a safety threat to motorists. The Community Services Association also says that the size of the herd is exploding. However, Sea Pine's own expert, Dr. Robert Warren of the University of Georgia, testified in court that the deer are healthy, the herd is not overpopulated, and is stable in size. A panel of three judges on the South Carolina Court of Appeals ruled in favor of a coalition of animal advocacy groups led by the Sea Pines Association for the Protection of Wildlife. SPAPW, the organization of over 800 Sea Pines property owners. The court halted the deer hunt while the group's appeal is being heard. The lawsuit alleged that the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources is not complying with state statutes and regulations applicable to a state wildlife sanctuary, and that plaintiffs are being denied due process by the issuance of permits without public notice and without any public hearing. The Sea Pines Association for Protection of Wildlife Chairman Gordon Stamler said, quote, "We are very thankful that the Court of Appeals granted our request to keep the status quo and not permit the Community Services Association to kill the deer during our appeal." Defenders of Wildlife and Maryland conservationist John Ned Gerber sued the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on Tuesday for violating the Endangered Species Act by failing to protect the endangered Delmarva fox squirrel. Defenders filed a lawsuit in federal district court in Washington, D.C. after the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service issued a permit authorizing construction of the Homeport Development Project in the key habitat of the species in Queen Anne's County, Maryland. This is the second time defenders in Gerber, a landowner and resident of Queen Anne's County, Maryland, have sued the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for violating the Endangered Species Act in connection with the Homeport development. Quote, "By allowing the Homeport development project to go forward, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is sanctioning the further destruction of the critically important habitat for this species in direct contravention of their conservation mandate under the Endangered Species Act," said Roger Slickheisen, president of Defenders of Wildlife. Defenders and Gerber said the habitat conservation plan developed by Homeport and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service does not meet Endangered Species Act requirements for protecting the squirrels. Quote, "The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has agreed to allow development to proceed in an area in which we know there are Delmarva fox squirrels, and in exchange for an agreement to protect another area that is currently barren of fox squirrels and utterly useless to their survival," says Gerber. Quote, "By signing off on the Homeport HCP, the Fish and Wildlife Service is essentially sending a message to developers that the federal government is in the business of sanctioning the continued loss of fox squirrel habitat." And the National Audubon Society will launch a campaign Monday to save the endangered California condor from a new threat. The proposed wind energy farm to be built next to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's designated critical California condor habitat north of Los Angeles. The Audubon Society will advocate changes to the federal wind energy credit that expired this summer. Audubon says legislation to continue the tax credit should say no wind farm would receive this federal tax subsidy if it were within 10 miles of critical California condor habitat. This provision would stop the proposed Enron wind farm and prevent future wind farms from being built close to critical California condor habitat. This last Monday, Audubon unveiled billboards in Houston, Texas, Enron's corporate headquarters in Los Angeles, and Washington, D.C. And the National Marine Fisheries Service has approved the listing of two more California Chinook salmon populations as threatened, but says three other Western Chinook populations do not warrant listing. The new listings are not expected to result in any new impacts on landowners or the economy, though the agency left open the possibility of listing Fall Run Chinook, the only commercial viable salmon fishery on the West Coast. The National Marine Fisheries Service listed the Central Valley Spring Run Chinook salmon and California Coastal Chinook as threatened. California salmon are named according to when they return from the ocean to the creeks where they were born 2 to 4 years early. The listings have been deferred since 1999 so the agency could gather additional comments and information about the status of the Chinook population. And from China, we read that a new anti-smuggling bureau in Kunming, Yunnan Province, China, has uncovered a large-scale illegal shipping of animal parts. In 1 week in August, officials of the bureau found more than 2,000 wildlife skins, including 11 tiger skins and more than 100 pieces of leopard skin. The confiscated skins and bones of various other animals filled an entire storage yard. The crackdown on wildlife smugglers is the largest since 1949. Customs officials in Yunnan's small city of Ruili discovered a bag full of cobras and other poisonous snakes that weighed 1,034 pounds. That night, officials went to the home of the bag's recipient to do an inspection and were aghast to find numerous illegal animal parts stuffed into a small room. These included 575 boa constrictor skins and 5 tiger skins. There were also many pieces of bear, leopard, wild yak, and panda skins. Also found were the heads of wild yaks and monkeys and elephant tusks. Most shocking of all was the discovery in 2 packed refrigerators of frozen bear paws. Oh boy. Also found were buckets of freshly peeled boa skins. I don't know. Uncle Dennis is kind of aghast. All right. Well, let's play a little music to kind of soothe ourselves here. This one's called Earth First Made. It's off Daryl Cherney's cassette called Timber.
There once was an Earth First Made who never was afraid of the chainsaw boys with their phallic toys and their bulldozers that cut the gray. The one thing that she liked was a tree that had been spiked, and when the security goons came round, she never could be found.
Radio will be right back.